This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, an organization that celebrates the hobby of homebrewing, protects the rights of homebrewers, and provides members with world-class brewing resources. Visit homebrewersassociation.org to learn more about membership. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 28th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewers AJ and Justin Hart join us to talk about Astarte, a Bronze Age-style beer inspired by an archaeology course AJ took in Cyprus after hearing about it through this very podcast. So watch out. Basic Brewing Radio is changing lives. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint and our brewing rainbow shirt. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, they say that new listeners will find us that way. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. This past Monday, I released a Basic Brewing video episode featuring Steve's spiced blood orange wheat beer, which was delicious. And Steve has started a blog page on stevesbrewshop.com, and the first entry is about that beer, along with the recipe. So head on over to stevesbrewshop.com to find out more about that. If you follow me on Instagram and such, you might have seen a photo of my small batch that I brewed in my Instant Pot. Jeff in Skeen, Texas, had seen me doing kettle souring in the Instant Pot a while back and asked me if somebody could brew an all-grain batch of beer just using the Instant Pot. Well, I tried it, and it worked. I shot a video of the process for a future video episode. It was a 1 gallon batch, essentially a 6-pack. The boil was a bit more vigorous than I anticipated, so I got a smaller amount of wort than I wanted that weighed in at a specific gravity around 1.130. I was trying to make a double IPA or an imperial IPA, but that was a lot bigger than I anticipated. So I looked at this sludgy stuff, and I thought about topping up the wort in the fermenter with some water, but then I thought, see what happens. So I pitched a whole packet of USO5 in about half a gallon of wort, and there was activity for a couple of days, but it slowed down. The yeast was sluggish in the sludgy wort. So 4 days into it, I got some spring water, and I topped off the jug. I estimate that I brought the original gravity to somewhere around 1080, so more manageable. So the yeast is feeling better after that. The airlock activity picked up after I diluted that sludgy stuff. So I'm hoping it'll turn out all right. This is a hoppy beer. So I'm calling it my Instant Pot Imperial IPA, or IPIIPA. Fingers crossed on that one. We've been talking every now and then about Safale S33 yeast, and whether it's a Belgian strain or an English strain. Mark in Bellevue emailed and sent a chart showing the genome mapping of different yeast strains. And Mark says, according to this, S33 is in the mixed origin group right next to Windsor. Maybe Steve is correct, and it's an Edmi strain. Thanks, Mark. And on that same topic, Chris from Bascule Brewery in Lorain, Ohio, writes, I wanted to share my experience using the enigmatic Safale US, or S33. In a pinch, I used it to make a golden strong ale, Belgian golden strong ale, and I too was surprised at its rather un-Belgian-like character. But then I recalled a little factoid that I read about Belgian beers. Chris said, I wish I can remember where I read it, but it's my understanding that what we know as the Belgian style was actually introduced to Belgium by a Scottish brewer. It's my theory that what we recognize as the spicy, fruity character you get from Belgian styles is actually a mutated version of what probably started out as a much more neutral yeast. Chris says, I know I'm kind of grasping at twigs here, but my theory is kind of confirmed when you taste a beer like Triple Carmelite, which tastes more like a Scottish ale than a Belgian beer, in my opinion. So there you go. Thanks, Chris. Then the plot thickens. Steve Wilkes saw that email, and he sent a screenshot from a brewing app that he uses on his phone. And on the screen for S33, the description is general purpose, and the source is listed as English ale yeast. So there you go. More grist for the mill. We're not sounding too defensive about this whole issue. let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. I went on the Homebrewers Association website, and I downloaded a recipe for Bell's Two-Hearted Ale, a clone of that, which it's a favorite beer of mine. And I set up my Warthog electric brew-in-a-bag system from High Gravity, poured in my Strike water, and set the controller to mash at 150 degrees Fahrenheit, or 65 C. And it doesn't take long for the water to come up to temperature, but it also doesn't take long to run to the post office. So I did. I just let the system do its thing, and I went out and got our mail, maybe sent off a package or two. And then when I got home, the Strike water was all ready to go at the perfect temperature. And I'm spoiled nowadays. In the old days with my propane system, I'd heat my Strike water a bit hotter than I needed, pour it into my Rubbermaid cooler mash tun, risking scalding myself, let the temperature settle out because you got to preheat that tun, and then I would pour water, cold water, into the cooler until I hit my desired temperature. And then I'd take out the amount of water that I put in to adjust the volume back where I wanted it. And then if I did manage to hit my mash rest temperature where I wanted it to be, that would fall over the next hour, even if I wrapped the cooler in blankets and quilts and such. Those days are over with the Warthog controller from High Gravity. I set it, and it stays rock solid for the entire mash time. And dialing in the power level in the boil mode is super easy as well. Now, on my two-hearted clone, when I collected my wort at the end of the boil, I was only 0.001 off the specific gravity that the recipe called for. Now, that doesn't always happen. That's not a guarantee if you get one of these systems, but it sure is fun when it does happen that way. High Gravity's electric systems take the pain out of propane from 1, 2, and 3 vessel systems, 5 gallons to 2 barrels. High Gravity has you covered, and if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric brewing purchase. Check all those out, all those systems, all those controllers, along with videos on how they work, at highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com. Okay, I got an email a few weeks ago from Justin Hart that I thought was a lot of fun. His wife, AJ, had gone to study ancient brewing techniques in Cyprus with Dr. Ian Hill, who had been on this very show talking about that very topic in January of 2013. Well, AJ and Justin brewed up a delicious beer inspired by her experiences, and we tasted it on tap at Bentonville Brewing Company. Well, Justin Hart, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James. Glad to be here.
And AJ Hart, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio as well.
Yes, thank you. Happy to be here.
I introduced you first, Justin, because you are the one who wrote me the email. But I have a feeling that I'm going to be talking to AJ more because you've had the more experience in this. So let me let you start, Justin, and say kind of give me a background on how y'all got interested in beer and specifically in brewing beer.
Well, I can identify the moment that I actually started drinking good beer, and that was I was in the military and decided to pick up a 6-pack of Yingling one day instead of just a Bud Light. And so that got me started on liking to try new beers, find out more interesting flavors and stuff like that. Then when I got out and I came home, a friend of mine gave me a Mr. Beer kit for my birthday. I believe we did two batches in that. Actually only bottled one. And was like, no, we've actually got to really get into this. And went down to, it was then the home brewery, picked up all our gear and started brewing like that weekend. So, and then that was 11 years ago now, I think. And so we've just been kind of doing it on our own ever since.
And where did you enter into the picture?
With the Mr. Beer kit and the bottle bombs and, yeah. So from the beginning, yes.
Yeah, he skipped that part.
So I take it that that your enthusiasm grew over the years, and that it became something that really kind of brought y'all closer together. Did you collaborate on brewing, or how did that work?
Oh yes, we collaborate on brewing quite often. If anything, I tend to be the one that sometimes comes up with really crazy things while we're eating dinner or something, like, oh wait, these two flavors in a beer, and it's like, wait, that can't work. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So
I clean the kegs.
Well, there you go. My wife Susan is sitting at the end of the table here with us, and she's my silent partner in this endeavor, and she tastes my beers and gives her opinion, but she has no designs on getting into the brew house. So she helps bottle. She does. She helps bottle, she says. Here we are at Bentonville Brewing Company in Rogers, Arkansas, which is the former home of Ozark Beer Company. This is a temporary home for Bentonville Brewing Company. They're building a new facility. But we are drinking something that is a very interesting beer. And AJ, I'm gonna let you start to tell the story of how this beer came to be. It's got quite an extensive origin story.
Okay, so what we're drinking is called Astarte, and it is a beer that was developed based on an experience that I had at a experimental beer archaeology project in Cyprus, which this is kind of nice because it comes full circle. Originally heard about on Basic Brewing Radio. So Justin actually one day was listening to the podcast and sent me a message saying, they're putting out a call for on their podcast. There's a call for a project in Cyprus where they are doing experimental archaeology, trying to brew Bronze Age beer, and they're looking for people with an interest in archaeology or a background in archaeology and an interest in beer. And that checked a lot of boxes for me because my background is actually in archaeology. I've never actually had a job in archaeology because it's a little hard to find that something to pay the bills. And at the time I'd been working in IT for almost 7 years, and I was kind of ready for a change and wanted to get back to a little more of my archaeology roots. And I thought archaeology plus beer, that's going to be hard to pass up. So went ahead and quit with Justin's support, quit my job and went to Cyprus for 3 weeks. And, did some experimental archaeology with that. We built a malting kiln using Bronze Age methods, which was a lot of like stomping in mud and making mud brick. And those things are really heavy. I kind of got pretty buff working out. And I got a great tan because Cyprus is an island in the Mediterranean. We were less than a kilometer from the beach, which was great. But, you know, it was really hot too. So,
so Justin, you told your wife to quit her job and then you sent her away for a month.
We have a strange relationship sometimes. It just seemed like too perfect of a thing to pass up, and an excellent way to transition into new things. Who knew what was going to be on the other side of that 3 weeks? So I was excited for her to go.
So did Ian Hill, was he there at the place where you are?
Oh, yes. He was in there mixing mud brick with us and putting it on there and directing us and saying, okay, no, wait, that one can't be there. The wall's going to collapse. the next day. I told you the wall was going to collapse. So yes, some trial and error there, which that's all about experimental archaeology. So, with that, we actually brewed kind of an experimental brew in Cyprus, open fermentation with adding in some figs and honey and things like that. And unfortunately, it was actually probably the worst thing I've ever had in my life. Like, it was all the off flavors, like the funky gem sock cheese. It was terrible. But the basis of some really cool flavors were there, and there was a lot of, you know, ever since then, coming back, I was thinking that could have been the basis of a really cool brew, and I really wanted to give it another try. So
I have to interject. I have to tell a little story about Professor Hill. On the show that he was on, you know, sometimes Skype is free and worth every penny. And this was like the worst experience I've ever had with Skype doing an interview. Like the first half of the interview went okay. And about, you know, maybe 30 minutes into it, it started to cut out. And so it was random. At first it was like, you know, we would talk for a couple of minutes and then boom, it would shut off and I'd have to call him back. And I'd say, okay, the last thing I heard from you was this. And he would just pick up right where he left off, telling this story or answering the question. And it got to where 45 or 50 seconds would go by and the connection would drop. And so so if you listen to the interview, he does such a good job of telling the story that I was able to edit it all together. And you can't, I don't think you can tell. And he was in Scotland, and I think it was in the middle of the night when we interviewed or something. You know, it was ridiculous what he had to go through to do that interview, and I'm very grateful for him for doing that. But anyway, that's the behind-the-scenes story on that. So you and I both probably experienced his patience.
Yes, yes, and his accent.
So Justin, when AJ came back, did you experience sort of, was she changed in the way she approached the brewing process?
Well, it seemed like she definitely had an interest in really grabbing onto some strange or old things, you know, historical methods, ingredients, things to play around with. You know, we keep kicking around the ideas of doing like stone beers and other kind of boil and fermentation methods. But so it seemed like she definitely had a elevated interest in those sorts of things after she got back.
And y'all are doing some education with local homebrewers here, right?
Yes, actually also just with the general public, but that tends to, the interest in beer tends to be among homebrewers as well, so especially in this type of beer because it's a little bit out of the ordinary.
So were you able to integrate this, your learning, into those classes, and were you able to actually brew some drinkable beers using these influences?
Yes, actually our first homebrew batch of Astarte, against all odds, came out really well, and we were doing a beer history talk with that, and it was combined with kind of like a whirlwind tour of world beer history, and so Astarte in that case was just a footnote as in terms of a Bronze Age Mediterranean inspired beer, basically ingredients that would have been available in the Bronze Age Mediterranean using, you know, like smoked malts to emulate a malting kiln that would have been wood fired, or actually probably more likely peat or dung fired, but we did not go that in detail, but
no poo beer.
No. Maybe a future iteration, but
warn me if you do. So you brewed the beer that's called Astarte, which we have in front of us. So where does the name come from?
So Astarte is inspired by my time in Cyprus. So Cyprus is, according to mythology, the birthplace of Aphrodite. But Aphrodite wasn't really around in the Bronze Age so much. But the predecessor to Aphrodite would have been a Phoenician goddess by the name of Astarte. So actually the correct pronunciation would be probably something more like A Start T, but because this beer was inspired by Cyprus, and you know, Aphrodite is the goddess of love and all of that, so thought Astarte would be a nice homage to that.
And how did it get the attention of the brewers here at Bentonville?
So we've been kind of friends with Katie and Bo and Lee since pretty soon after Bentonville opened in their original location. We'd come in a lot. We'd talk to them a lot. And actually, I think at the time that we brought a bottle of Astarte over, were you serving beer here?
No, not at that time.
Okay.
But I had previously.
So Amanda or AJ had previously worked here serving beer, and so we had a good rapport with the owners and brought in a bottle and gave one to Bo to try, and he sends me a text message that basically goes, "What is going on in my mouth?" as he tries to taste this beer, because I tell him, "Bo, this is a very strange beer as far as normal, you know, everyday craft beer that you'll find around here," and he really enjoyed it and thought that it would be something worthwhile to scale up into the big system.
Now, was that beer, your homebrew, was it a spontaneous fermentation?
No. I learned my lesson. I didn't quite want to experience the full flavor array that happened in Cyprus. I wasn't brave enough to try that again. but trying to capture those other flavors, because Bronze Age brewing, it probably... Yes, it would have been open fermentation, but there would have been a little bit more of a brewing tradition around that, or that's the speculation. So there may have been, you know, the magic stick that may have been there to inoculate it with the good yeasts, or using specific, you know, the yeast on the skins of the figs, things like that. So it may not have been as haphazard as a bunch of college students trying to brew it in... You know, earthenware vessels. There may have been more of a science to it in that way.
There was probably some selection along the way of brew. Oh, this one's really good. Use this stick in this container to brew the beer in from now on. And you know, that's the theory at least. And it seems to make sense that once you get something that works, you keep doing it. And it's unlikely that they did get something good the first try. So Bo was inspired to give it a go.
Yeah, he was excited by, you know, just the newness. I can't really say newness for a Bronze Age beer, but new to modern palates, experience, and you know, as friends of the brewery and home brewers, he knew that we were involved in trying to bring education to the area of you know, home brewing and how much fun it can be. So he wanted to, you know, help support us and show the world a little bit, I think, of what we could do.
So what's in this? Well, first of all, cheers.
Cheers.
Yes.
Susan, across the table.
Susan's drinking a Kolsch.
Nothing wrong with that.
Mm. Now, I have to say, Justin, you warned me that this was a quote-unquote different beer, and that it's been compared to interesting things on Untappd and such.
I believe there's at least one review that calls it beef jerky in a glass.
Even Susan's making a face at that. It's a drinkable beer. It's actually... it's got a nice smoky component. There's no head on it. For a reason maybe that we'll get into here in a minute. But it's got a nice malty character. It's got a nice balancing bitterness. It's very drinkable, and it kind of reminds me of some of the smoked beers that Steve Wilkes has made in the past. You know, they're balanced, they're drinkable, they've got a nice smoky character, but then they're not. It's not like licking an ashtray. You know, it's a nice... sitting around the campfire kind of smoke rather than, and also it's not like, you know, eating a bunch of, you know, a couple of rashers of bacon. You know, it's a good balance. It's a nice balanced beer. So AG, what's in this beer?
It's interesting that you noted on the the bitter notes, because there is no hops in this beer, because in terms of what would have been available in the Bronze Age Mediterranean, hops may have been there, but it would not have been the hop tradition that we have today. So for bittering, we actually used thyme and wormwood. Mostly the wormwood for the bittering, but the thyme kind of brought in a nice earthy tone to it. There's figs, which we think that may be where some of the meaty flavor comes in, perhaps, or combined with the rock malt, the smoked malt, for that smoky flavor.
So where do those bittering ingredients come in?
We threw all those in at the last 5 minutes of the boil. So there's no real time for isomerization or anything. So it's and actually, I'm trying to recall, I believe the wormwood is actually thrown in dry. Huh. Or right at flame out and then a little bit into the fermenter. So
where do you get wormwood and how much do you use in a 5 gallon batch?
So in a 5 gallon batch, it was a very small amount. It was only a teaspoon. Wow. We picked it up at our local homebrew shop. This is nobody's chasing the green fairy with this beer. No worries there. But wormwood, we've actually used it for some homemade sodas and things. It a little bit goes a long way. We actually inspired, there is a book by Mary Azette called Speed Brewing, in which she describes a absinthola, which uses a little bit of wormwood there. She calls for quite a bit more than we were willing to toss in there, but because it packs a punch. But yeah, so I think it was a teaspoon for 5 gallons.
So if we see any hallucinations, boy, I'm halfway into this beer. It's only 5% alcohol. Any hallucinations on the way home, they're going to be real and not inspired by the wormwood. It's delicious, I got to say. I say delicious a lot on the show, but it is. It's really good. I was expecting to be very polite about how it tasted. I would have another snifter of this. This is really good. So how old is this and how has it changed over time?
So I believe we brewed this in August or September of last year. And it seems to me that the sour and the smoke profile have balanced out. When it was fresh, the smoke was pretty forward to me, but AJ's a lot better about describing flavors than I am. Like I said, I'm the keg washer.
So yeah, we brewed it. I think our brew day was on the big system was August 12th. Our initial homebrew was early last year. So we brewed our first batch, I believe, in February for an education event in March. That was a lot of intense brewing at that time because we brewed, I believe, 8 beers in the course of 2 weekends, so that was a little intense there. But that was our initial homebrew batch, and we were like, wow, this turned out really well. Let's see if we can does lightning strike twice, and in this case, fortunately, it did. When we dialed that recipe in, and then we brewed it on the big system here at Bentonville Brewing. Our brew day was August 12th, and then it was released in early September.
And what were the challenges in scaling up from homebrew to the big system?
Well, one of the big questions is, what does wormwood do at this scale? You know, just like with hops, it's not a linear, just easy multiplication, and there's no data on what wormwood does in beers. So we just really had to take a stab at that. And the time ended up being a little bit lower amount than what we had calculated, just for lack of ingredients and timing. But the flavor still came through. So that one's obviously not linear either. So it's just very interesting to see. There's nobody really has any data on this stuff. And I don't think we even have a way to measure how this stuff would go in.
There's no wormwood calculator out there on the internet somewhere.
Beersmith 4 coming up.
Are you listening, Brad? Were there any? You alluded to some issues or a question with the figs.
So we used 15 pounds of chopped figs, which if you've ever chopped 15 pounds of figs, that's not fun. Dried figs, And Bo and I sat there and discussed whether we should actually worry about putting the figs into bags before we throw it into the boil. And we decided to, just for safety's sake, go ahead and throw them in bags and make it mostly to make it easier to throw them into the kettle, which was a great thing because once we hit the whirlpool, we found out that figs sink. And and a bag of figs will plug up the outlet pipe on a pump or on the kettle going to the pump. And so it was a tense time of reaching down in there with the longest paddle that we could to try and pry that thing off the outlet so we could whirlpool the beer as we were trying to get it ready to go into the fermenter. So if we hadn't used the bags, it would have ended up as fig slurry. I'm sure, and probably at least one dead pump, probably two.
Well, there you go. Lesson learned. And I'm assuming that this is not spontaneously fermented either. What yeast did you use?
We used Nottingham from, is it Lallemand or Lallemin?
Yeah. Close enough. The Nottingham yeast.
I'm sorry. No, it's Belle Saison.
Oh! Yes, Belle Saison.
Okay, never mind. The Belle Saison.
Sorry, we've heard a lot since then. So.
And you don't have your notes in front of you, so I'm putting you to the test here. So it I'm sure that yeast adds to the complexity of this beer because there are some really interesting characteristics that come out of that yeast. So
we selected Belle Saison specifically trying to pull in a little bit of that sourness. Or hoping for a little bit of sourness flavor. Again, not brave enough to opt for the spontaneous fermentation or open fermentation because gym socks once was enough for me. But
The first competition I ever judged, they put me in the Belgian category. One of the descriptors that I wanted to write on a judging form was animal shelter. So that's because there was the aroma of disinfectant and there was some fecal characteristics in there as well. So yeah, so I can imagine the brewer said, "Ooh, this didn't turn out so good. Belgian," which is not, it's not the way it's supposed to work. So cheers again to an excellent I think it's very good. I don't know why anybody would complain about it. Maybe if you drink a Miller Lite all the time or something like that, maybe this would be challenging for your palate. But for somebody who's had a lot of somebody who's been to club night at HomebrewCon since 2006, this is not the weirdest thing that I've consumed. So good job.
Thank you.
So do you want to talk about your organization or your what is it, a company, an organization, or what who are you and what do you do?
We are Mew Brew, and it's really just we put a name towards what we do together with brewing experimentation. We like to build hardware, do tinkering, mess around with recipes, brew weird stuff, and we try to write about it, and I try to write about it, and I'm usually not very good at it. I've got about 100 drafts of articles and only 5 actual articles. But so it's just something that we try to do for fun. And being an engineer, the Mew in Mew Brew was just too much of a joke to be able to pass up.
Not being an engineer, I don't get it.
Well, it's the Mew symbol is micro. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, I get it. Okay.
We've had to explain it a lot.
If I ever own a business, I'm not using that.
And so do you have a space?
Yeah, our basement. No. So, no, I mean, we just have our brew shop downstairs. So.
And you are also, reading the footer on your email, you're also an officer in the local homebrew club.
Yes, for 2019, I'm the vice president of the Ozark Zimmergists Homebrew Club. First Tuesday of every month. Find us on Facebook, because we currently meet at Schlotsky's in Rogers. Arkansas's ABC laws make sure that we go to the right place.
I like their bread. We used to go to Schlotsky's a lot. And then how would you find, I assume you have a website for the Mew Brew.
It's mewbrew.beer.
Okay, that's what I was like.
Spell it. So
M-U brew dot beer.
Okay, well, lots of people spell brew in many different ways.
Okay.
So what other projects, are there any other ancient inspired projects in the works, or what kind of guidelines can you give people who want to do a beer that is inspired by Bronze Age brewing? What are some inspirations that you can throw their way?
So I am a big fan of the so-called Indiana Jones of beer archaeology, Patrick McGovern. He has published several books. He, if you're familiar with Dogfish Heads, Midas Touch, and other books like that, I'm sorry, other beers like that. He's worked with Dogfish Head brewer Sam
Caligione.
Thank you. I was about to butcher that. Yes, he has worked. They have worked together to as collaborations to come up with several more ancient and historical beer recipes. There's a couple of books out there that Patrick McGovern has. Uncorking the Past is a more scholarly version of that, but if you geek into that, it's a great resource. In terms of projects we have in our pipeline, we as part of our beer history talk, we also did a kind of a Theobroma, a Dogfish Head Theobroma clone, which turned out interesting. At some point, I would like to do a true chicha, where you actually chew the corn. But once we have to convince people that saliva in their beer is pre-fermentation is really going to be okay. It's not going to hurt anybody. So,
yeah, people's bodily fluids and I haven't gone over that line yet. I didn't sample the rogue beer that had the yeast that was harvested from the brewer's beard. Susan's making a face on that. That's where I didn't cross that line. I was like, I just can't get. I know it's safe. I know it's boiled. I know everything's good. I just can't go there. So
there are even stranger ones out there. In the dark corners of the internet, if you really want to look, there's yeast sampled from even stranger places.
Enough said. I've seen that one too. but chicha, yeah, that's where you chew the corn and the enzymes in your saliva start to break down the starches. And then, again, I guess you it would be boiled, so you would be sanitizing the beverage. Mm-hmm. But still, people's spit is people's spit.
You know, it's kind of like the people drawing water out of a cow pond to be able to brew with, too, you know? It's like, it really freaks people out. But it's gone through the mash. It's boiled. You're fine. It's killed everything.
It's kind of ironic that we're talking this way, because the episode, I think, that you heard about the call for entries was the episode that I talked to the organization that was taking treated sewage water and brewing, having a homebrew competition to brew with that. It all comes around in a nice circle. I don't know why I'm pointing my mic at you, AJ. Talk about poo some more.
Well, so that's a consideration of if we really wanted to get as super authentic version of Astarte as possible. One, I'd have to go back to Cyprus, because they're going to have different wild yeasts there, which I'm in. That'd be great. But yeah, it'd be interesting, all the different factors, like the malting kiln that we built. There was even thoughts of like how, which Dr. Ian Hill has some great papers published regarding some of the science around the structure of the kiln. And that was part of our excavation project with that, was kind of analyzing, because unfortunately in archaeology you only get like the bottom third of the wall, so you kind of have to extrapolate and guess what the top part would have looked like. Was it covered in thatch, or was it mud brick, or you know, how did it collapse in? Was it open at the top? But thinking about how that smoke would have circulated in there, what the temperature gradient would have been, how roasty those malts got, were they maybe drying meat or fish in there as well? Would that have affected the flavor? There's all those interesting factors to think about in terms of that flavor. And another thing to think about is the modern palate is much different than what the ancient palate would have been. At that point, they were probably like, hey, this is great because all those sore muscles I have from working all day, they don't hurt so bad after a couple of glasses of this. So,
yeah, and preservation wasn't as good, so maybe the meat that they were eating was tasted a little worse than what they were drinking. So, yeah, there's a lot of factors that, the modern palate is a little spoiled in many ways. Well, this is fun. Anything else to add for the cause?
Oh, there's always thoughts working. Justin and I are both probably I think we would describe ourselves as foodies. So there's always, if we're traveling or just trying different foods, there's always that, what kind of a beer would this make or interesting flavors. One of them we did, we kind of came up with the idea and then Justin brewed it, was almost like a margarita-inspired beer. Actually, we just fairly in the last year had our first child, and so while I was pregnant, I was off beer, but I kept coming up with all these crazy flavors of beers that I wanted once I could have beer again, and I really missed salt, and so I was like, oh, we need a margarita beer, and now, of course, now there's lime salted Gozas all over the place now, but... And then Justin adapted one with mezcal in it. And so, yeah, we've been having all kinds of fun.
Well, if you come up with something else fun, let me know. And, maybe we'll get together and do this again.
That sounds like an excellent plan. We'll do some more. We played around with tepaches as well. And those are fun. That was another from Mary Azette's book, Speed Brewing. We did a tepache. We've done a number of 5-gallon batches of that, just saving pineapple rinds and peel and CO sugar. And, I mean, it takes just a couple days to make.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually, that is my father's favorite thing that we brew. Out of all of the beers that we've brewed, that's the one. He's like, I really like that tepache. What kind of beer is that? Well, it's not actually a beer, Dad. Okay. But it is a fermented brew, so we'll go with that.
Well, there you go. All right. Stay tuned. Watch this space. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Say hi, Susan.
Hello.
Well, thanks again to AJ and Justin. That really was a fun and tasty beer. And I'm hoping that they collaborate on more beers that are inspired by ancient techniques. And keep us posted. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check all that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can find our logbook so you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Also, take a look at our silicone pints. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voice, and we'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.